Well, it's great to have you joining with us this morning. And as we're turning to John chapter 11, I want to go down memory lane with some of you for just a few moments, whether you're part of this small gathering in the building or many of you who are watching online. Some of you who grew up during the 70s, 80s, and 90s will remember a lot of things about Northern Ireland. One of the sad things about Northern Ireland is that we lived through troubled times. Some of you will remember making a journey to Belfast, hoping to be able to buy certain goods and products, only to be prevented from going into the city. Why? Well, there was probably a bomb scare, and you wouldn't be able to get any further, and you'd have to turn around because the city would be ringed off. There'd be a perimeter set around it. But what would happen next? Well, someone would have to come. Someone would have to leave either the army barracks or the police barracks, make their journey to Belfast, to park a vehicle, probably either just outside the vehicle or just in the entrance. They'd get suited up. They'd put on the most protective equipment available to them. Why? Because they were going to take what was known as the long walk, where they would move past their colleagues. They'd move past the different checkpoints that were keeping people away from the bomb. And they'd take a long journey on their own. Can you imagine what they must have been thinking about as they made their journey to the bomb? Was it a real bomb? Was it a hoax? Was it the real thing? Was there a booby trap? But they were going there out of love and care and compassion for lots of other people in the city and surrounding the city, that they themselves wouldn't be put in danger. They put their lives in the place of others. And as we make these final steps with Jesus on his journey from Jericho to Jerusalem, he is now going to enter into enemy territory. Jesus is, in just a few days' time, going to make a solitary walk to the cross on his own. But now as he makes this walk to Bethany, just 2 miles from Jerusalem, he's going to take the walk that is going to lead to his own death. Because just at the end of John chapter 10, it says that the Jews had tried to stone Jesus. They want to arrest Jesus. They want to extinguish the life and the ministry of Jesus, who they believe is a messianic imposter. And so Jesus is going to take this long, lonely walk to Bethany out of love for a friend, out of love for you, out of love for me, because he's going to be signing his own death warrant. And if you're looking at the theme of this whole chapter, while it speaks to us about Jesus as the resurrection and the life, I think there's perhaps an even deeper meaning. And it's this: greater love has no one than this, than that a man would lay down his life for his friends. Jesus will say this in John chapter 15, just a number of days after this incredible account with the raising of Lazarus from the dead. And so he's helping his disciples think through how they're going to live their life after him. And he says, the greatest thing you can get your head around is this: greater love has no man or woman than this, than that you would lay down your life for a friend. And so Jesus will take this lonely walk back into enemy territory out of love for a friend. This is how much he loves Lazarus. This is how much he loves us. So let's see this narrative unfold before our eyes this morning. Let's look at the first movement. Jesus has love for people who are spiritually dead. John chapter 11, verses 1 to 27. Jesus has love for those who are spiritually dead. Look at verse 11, or chapter 1, verse 11. Now a certain man was ill. Lazarus, his name actually means, interestingly, he who God helped. Lazarus of Bethany. John wants us to know that Bethany is very closely located to Jerusalem, just a stone's throw away, as we would say here in Northern Ireland, from the bigwigs, the Pharisees, the religious leaders in Jerusalem. And as Jesus will enter into Bethany, he could almost smell the breath of the religious leaders. He's signing his own death warrant as he comes back into this territory. It's the village of Mary and her sister, Martha. It was Martha who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus lay ill. Now, this is a very wealthy family. For Mary to be able to anoint Jesus with this type of perfume showed just how wealthy this family was. The house of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus was Jesus' home from home. They were no doubt the rich providers of much of his ministry. They would have given him hospitality. They would have given him money. They would have given him shelter. This was his home away from home. This was the family he loved outside his own family. And they have a problem. Lazarus was ill. So verse 3, the sisters sent to Jesus saying, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." Now, some of you know what it's like when you get the news that someone you love is ill. Perhaps if you're in a foreign country and someone in your family is very tragically ill, you want to do all in your power to get the next flight back so that you'll be able to speak to them, to attend to them, to pray with them. But Jesus, he doesn't do it. Look at verse 4. But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It's for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." But let's see the heart of Jesus. What's going on underneath him? Verse 5, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed. It seems crazy, but he stays 2 days longer in the place where he was. I want you to think about this. Jesus was never on a human timetable. Jesus was on a divine timetable. Jesus is never on our human timetable. He's on his divine timetable. And as you look at this story of Jesus having great love for us, sometimes you might, with Mary and Martha, wonder why Jesus is delaying. Why is Jesus allowing this to happen in my life? And so these things play over in your mind and your heart, and you, like Mary and Martha, might think, well, Jesus doesn't really love us. Jesus doesn't really care for us, because if he did, he would have done anything to get here right now. He would have changed my situation. No doubt this is how they were feeling. But look at what Jesus says to his disciples. Then after he had said to his disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." And so they jump in. The disciples said to him, "But Rabbi, Rabboni, the Jews were just there seeking to stone you. And you're going there again, Jesus? You're crazy." Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." What is Jesus saying? He says there's a limited amount of daylight in a day. I have a limited amount of days and hours on this earth before I need to get to Jerusalem in the week of Passover, and when the other animals are being sacrificed, I must offer up my life as a lamb that has been slain from before the very foundation of the earth. Jesus says, I have a limited amount of time. The hour has come. And so the disciples, who are on a human timetable, there's been a number of times where Peter has tried to say, "Lord, let's just stay here. Let's build 3 tabernacles, and here we can worship together." No, no, no. Jesus is on a divine timetable. And so verse 11, after saying these things, he said to them, and look at the language, how it changes to the disciples, our friends. You remember Lazarus, the house that we stay in? The place that when we're wrecked from a day of ministry, we'll go to Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, and they'll have a great feast for us, a great banquet for us, and they'll look after us, and we'll have shelter away from the religious leaders. Do you remember the nights, as we would say in Northern Ireland, the banter that we had with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus? Our friend Lazarus. But look at what he says next. But I'm going to go. I'm going to go and awaken him. The disciples won't be able to raise Lazarus from the dead. There's only one who's the resurrection and the life, and that's Jesus. But the disciples are on a human timetable. Verse 12, the disciples said to him, "Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he's going to be all right, Jesus. Don't worry about it." But now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I'm glad that I was not there so that you might believe. Why? Because in a sense, this is all parabolic of what's going to happen to Jesus. just a matter of days from now, Jesus is going to be nailed to a cross and he dies. Jesus is going to be in the tomb like Lazarus was in the tomb, and people are going to wonder, what is God's timetable all about when Jesus is lying in the tomb? And so Jesus is trying to instruct his disciples about who he really is. He wants them to believe. Thomas gets a hard time, but here he's actually got a lot of faith. Earlier in the gospel, verse 16, so Thomas, called a twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us go that we might die with him. That was the truth. To go back to Bethany was a death trap. But it was out of love that Jesus will return. So verse 17, now when Jesus came, he arrives in Bethany, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. In Jewish custom, it was said that the spirit of the person or the soul of the person said to sort of hover around the body, but on the fourth day it would rise. So in the Jewish mind, Lazarus was now dead. Now it was the fourth day. Bethany, John wants us to know, such a clever writer, he wants us to know where Jesus is. Bethany, verse 18, was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off. You can imagine the secret police from the Pharisees and the religious leaders. They've got their eyes everywhere looking for Jesus. Verse 19, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. Now, a brother was a huge loss. He would have been the wage earner in this patriarchal society. So when Martha, the activist, heard that Jesus was coming, she went out and met him. But Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, Lord, if only you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Now, this is incredible. It's a confession of faith on one hand. Jesus, I know that you have power. Jesus, I believe all the things that you've said. I believe all the theological truths. But here I am living with disappointment. The truth doesn't seem to line up with what you've said. If only you'd been here. Jesus, if only you'd come earlier. And the truth is, many of us have said that in our own lives, haven't we? The truth is, some of you might be saying that now. Jesus, if only if you'd done it in my timetable. And she's wrestling with the mystery of what theologians call God's sovereignty and God's providence. But it's incredible, this response from Jesus. Jesus said to her, verse 23, your brother Lazarus will rise again. Martha said in many ways, Jesus, I know the theology. I know he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. But then Jesus speaks to her. Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he dies, yet he shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. And then he looks at Martha. Do you believe this? Do you really believe this? Martha, you know how much I love you. You know how much time I've spent with you as a family. You've been my people, my home from home. But do you really believe this? In your hour of greatest disappointment, in your hour of greatest doubt, in your hour of questioning the goodness and the love of God, do you really still believe? I wonder, is he asking us that question today? Then verse 27, she said to him, yes, Lord, I believe. What an incredible confession of faith. I believe that you are the Christos. I believe that you are the Son of God who is coming into the world. Jesus reveals his love here for a family, but he reveals his love for those who are spiritually dead. Lazarus is dead and buried. That's a picture of our spiritual state outside of Christ. For the wages, Romans says, of sin is death. Ephesians chapter 2 says, we are born dead in our trespasses and sins. Psalm 51, David says, surely I was born in sin, and in sin did my mother conceive me. And so without Christ, if you're not a Christian, the Bible says that you're lifeless and hopeless. But consider this parable that reveals his love and his mercy and his grace for us. But secondly, there's love for people grieving over sin. There's love for people grieving over sin, verse 28. When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary. Now, they're two very different sisters. Martha, she was the activist. She was the worker. Mary, she loved to sit and to think. And in Luke chapter 10, 38 to 42, Martha's cooking and cleaning and preparing because she's fussing around Jesus. And Mary, all she wanted to do is hear from Jesus. And probably the truth is in the middle between the two sisters as to how they should have approached Jesus. Saying in private, the teacher here is calling you. The rabbi is here. And look at Mary's reaction. This is the woman who wants to sit and think rather than to act. But look at what happens to her. Now, Jesus had not yet come. And when she heard it, verse 29, she rose quickly. This little phrase, rose quickly, in the original text, is used in other places to describe things that are raised from the dead, that are resurrected. Mary's lifeless, hopeless, and state of destitution, suddenly Jesus is here. The rabbi is here. She's been resurrected herself. And so she goes to him. Verse 31, when the Jews who were with her in the house consoling her, the same phrase again, saw Mary rise or be resurrected and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. This is incredible. This is a rich, wealthy, affluent family. No doubt in that culture they had paid professional mourners to come and kind of have a big deuce, in a sense, mourning the loss of Lazarus. They maybe think she's now going to the tomb, but she's going to Jesus. She goes to Jesus with her problems. She goes to Jesus with her doubts. She goes to Jesus with her disappointments. Now, Mary reveals her heart. Verse 32. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and she saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, it's just like her sister. Lord, if only you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Just like you and me in the midst of our shattered dreams and our shattered marriages and our shattered families and our shattered jobs and our shattered churches, sometimes we say, Lord, if only you'd shown up then. And what does Jesus reveal about himself? Well, there's a sense in which when he's been speaking to Martha, the activist, the first sister, he's revealed his divinity. I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. He's shown his incredible divinity. Now he shows us his incredible humanity. Look at verse 33. When Jesus saw Mary weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved. In the original text, they would have used this phrase to describe a horse that was literally snorting with anger because someone or something had moved into their territory. This is the sort of anger that Jesus has over sin. Now, Jesus, I actually don't believe, is angry necessarily that Lazarus himself is dead. When he goes back into enemy territory, when he returns to Bethany, into the area where he knows that he's ultimately going to be arrested and crucified and nailed to a cross, what he's grieving over here is sin. He was there in Genesis 1 and 2 as the stars were flung into space and he created the ends of the earth. And Colossians 1 says he upholds it by his mighty word of power. But here he is with people that he loves grieving over sin and brokenness. This was not the way it was meant to be. And here is sin just taking its root in people's lives that I love. He was deeply moved, and at the end of verse 33, he's greatly troubled. And verse 34, and he said, where have you laid him? They said, Lord, come and see. And the shortest verse in the Bible. Can you see this happening? Jesus wept. He who created the ends of the earth, weeping. Did he have his arms around Mary and Martha? As they stood looking at that tomb, weeps. And that's why the writer to the Hebrews says in Hebrews 4 that he's a sympathetic, a faithful high priest. He understands our weaknesses and can help us in our times of grief and need. And here he is, out of love, grieving with a grieving family over the consequences of sin. And look at the Jews, the professional mourners who are maybe looking on. Verse 36, they say, so the Jews said, see how he loved him. This is the humanity of Christ, just simply grieving over the consequences of sin in a family that he loves. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone lay against it. And Jesus said, take away the stone. But Martha, the activist, is back on the scene. The sister of the dead man said to him, Lord, curious, by the time there'll be an order, that the King James Version says, he stinketh. There was an incredible order. Why? Because in this first century context, they wouldn't have been used to embalming. So the body's been decaying for 4 days. Jesus, hold on. In the midst of our shattered dreams, let's not disgrace ourselves any longer. Jesus said there, verse 40, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. What must Mary and Martha have been thinking? And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around that they might believe that you sent me. And when he said these things, the original text, it says, he screamed out, Lazarus, Lazarus, come out. Matthew Henry, who's an old writer, said this, if he hadn't have said Lazarus' name, every person who was dead and buried in the tombs would have come out. That's how powerful Jesus is. The man who had died, verse 44, came out, and his hands and his feet bound with linen strips and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. This is a picture of Jesus' love for a grieving family and his power over sin and death. He has that same compassion and that same love for you and me. Love for people who are spiritually dead, pictured by Lazarus' physical death. Love for grieving families like you and me because of the consequences of sin. And he has that same love and compassion for us. And then thirdly, and very quickly, love for enemies. Look at verse 3. Love for people who are enemies of God. You see, the Apostle Paul says in his writing, he said, someone might possibly dare to die for a good person. Lazarus was a good man. But for an enemy, for a bad person, would someone die? Consider Jesus' love for those that were enemies of God. Verse 45. Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, they believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them, this is the death trap, what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees, they gathered the council and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. And this is incredible. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in Jesus. And the Romans, they're going to come and take away all our power and our popularity and our prestige and our place and our nation. But then the sly, rude manipulator, Caiaphas, slithers in. He was the high priest that year, and he said to them, you know nothing at all. Nor do you understand that it is better for you that one man should die for the people. Not that the whole nation should perish. He did not say this on his own. This is incredible words from John. But being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. And not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. Just one chapter ago, Jesus had revealed himself as the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. And then he said these words, there are other sheep who are not yet of this fold. I must go and gather them in. Those that are Gentiles, those that were enemies of God, those that were hostile towards God, alienated in their minds from God. And so here is Jesus, out of love for enemies, willing to put himself back in enemy territory and even using people like Caiaphas, who will ultimately press the button that will bring about Jesus' week of passion, which we will meet him just in a few days' time, where he will be riding into Jerusalem on a donkey, not just for friends, but for enemies, for those who are hostile towards God. And that might be you today. Here he comes riding in Jerusalem to give up his life as a ransom for your sin and for mine on the cross. And so verse 55 brings this chapter to a close. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and many went up from the country to Jerusalem before the Passover to purify themselves. And they were looking for Jesus and saying to one another as he stood in the temple, "What do you think? Will he come to the feast?" Now the chief priests and the scribes had given orders that if anyone knew where he was, he should let them know so that they might arrest him. Jesus comes here to this Passover out of love. Why? Greater love has no one than this, than that a man would lay down his life, not just for friends, but for people like you and me who were once enemies, but through the cross can now be made new. Let us pray. Father, we thank you for Jesus. We thank you that you heard him and that you always hear him. And even now he intercedes at your right hand. We thank you that he is a faithful and a compassionate high priest. We thank you that he has love for people who are spiritually dead to make them new. His love for people who grieve over the consequences of sin and can identify with them. His love for people like us who were once enemies and hostile and alienated from the kingdom. And through the cross, he can bring us near. Father, on this morning, we thank you for Jesus. Amen.